Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Bob Ritter. Ritter is the executive director of the Cancer Resource Center of the Finger Lakes. His involvement with cancer support and education began in 1996 when he was diagnosed with breast cancer. Ritter also writes a popular column about living with cancer for the Ithaca Journal newspapers. The columns are being compiled for a forthcoming book entitled When Your Life is Touched by Cancer: Practical Advice and Insights for Patients, Professionals, and Those Who Care. It's to be published this August by Hunter House Publishers. And welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
I know you first got involved with cancer education was when your own cancer diagnosis came about in 1996. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Sure. I was diagnosed with breast cancer back then, and I think we all have a mental list of things to worry about, you know, paying the mortgage or relationships, whatever, and breast cancer wasn't on my list.
I'll bet.
But, you know, there I was, 40 years old, suddenly I had breast cancer. I remember writing down mastectomy on my calendar for August 30th. I still know the date, and it was just seemed so completely surreal. But I got thrust into that world, and I decided to make the most of it.
Yeah.
And I remember I really became public by writing a column for Newsweek magazine back then about being a man with breast cancer. And, you know, before the magazine came out, I was really nervous, thinking, what would people think?
Yeah.
It's just somewhat odd to be a man with breast cancer.
Yeah. Is there still a stigma even after all these years? Because you hear about more men talking about it, and back then they didn't.
It's much less of a stigma than it was back then, but still people don't talk about it too much. And I know lots of guys with breast cancer who still remain underground. You know, they don't want to talk about it. They feel like they have a woman's disease.
Wow.
And I really encourage them to speak up. And I encourage guys with breast cancer to go to breast cancer organizations and breast cancer meetings, because I want us to be at the table.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I often hear people say something like, you know, I knew that men got breast cancer in theory, but you're the first person I've ever met with breast cancer.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I like to be that person.
Is it the same trajectory for men? I mean, do you have to have a biopsy? Do you always have to have a mastectomy?
Pretty much. Actually, men almost always have a mastectomy because we have so little tissue to begin with.
So
they take it out. Really, the treatment is essentially the same. With chemotherapy, it's interesting for men, because if you look at breast cancer decision trees, the first branch is, are you pre or post menopausal?
Right, right.
And I wasn't altogether sure. But for the most part, they treat men like post menopausal women.
Oh, that's really interesting. And you said in one of your columns that chemo was the scariest part of your treatment. Tell us about that, because you didn't know what do to your body? Or?
Right. I didn't know what to expect. With surgery, I had a frame of reference. I knew I had surgery in the past. I kind of knew what it was like. With chemotherapy, you know, they can tell you what to expect, but until you actually go through it, you don't know what it's going to feel like.
Yeah, yeah. And it's probably different for every person, although there are some, you know, some guidelines like fatigue and...
Right. Fatigue is a very universal side effect, but... And some drugs are tougher than other drugs, and also people respond differently to the same drugs. So you can have two people getting the exact same drugs, and one person will sail through and the next person will be really sick.
Yeah, yeah. So I can understand why that was the scariest part. It was so unknown what
right.
might happen.
Actually, you know, the issue of unknown and uncertainty is probably the toughest thing about cancer. Is so much is uncertain. You don't know what the cause was. You don't know what the best treatment is. You don't know what the future will bring. And before cancer, I used to think with much more certainty about the future, about life. It was kind of planned. And when cancer came into my life, that sense of certainty evaporated.
Yeah, so you actually have to probably live more in the present.
Very much.
Which is probably in some ways a gift.
It was. It was having cancer changed my time horizon. I used to think about, you know, 10 years out, 20 years out. But with cancer, I thought much more about what am I doing today? Am I doing what I like? Am I with the people I want to be with?
Yeah.
And it really focused me on the present. And that really was a gift.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Now, not everyone who survives cancer wants to stay in the cancer pipeline community. Mm-hmm. What made you decide to go into cancer education as a career after that?
A couple of reasons. One, it was a natural evolution for me in the sense that when I was diagnosed, I was teaching at Ithaca College. So I'm a teacher by background. Before that, I was a hospital administrator. So I've been in healthcare, I've been in education. And after my diagnosis, I would talk to my classes at the college about my cancer. And it was very interesting because even those students who were in the back row with their caps pulled down would look up when I said I had cancer. And they were very aware of it, very into the process. And I'm sure today most of them won't remember what I taught them in the classroom about the subject, but they remember my cancer. And I really found power in that. I liked sharing my stories. And I mean, one thing about cancer is that we tend not to talk about it very often. We're still a little bit awkward. Yeah. You aren't quite sure what you should say or not say. But I liked being the speaker about cancer and letting people ask questions.
Yeah.
And I think
it's good for people to see the human side of cancer, too. You hear all these clinical statistics and, you know, women get breast cancer and blah, blah, blah. But to have a human being get up there and tell you about what life is like.
It's so true.
It's an enormous change for people.
It really is. And, for example, we have one program by which we connect doctoral students from Cornell who are studying cancer in the laboratory, by which we connect them to our clients at the Cancer Resource Center.
Oh, yes.
And it's very enlightening for the students because they're used to seeing cancer in a test tube or in a beaker in the laboratory. And when they see real people, it changes their perspective.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think that's a valuable thing that we could be spreading in all aspects of medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've often told my doctors, you don't know what you've put me through.
Mm-hmm.
You write on a little piece of paper about test and this and that, and you have no idea what it does to your soul, your body, your whole life.
I mean, the side effects, things like cost.
Yeah. And the thought of I might die, you know. That's such a unique thing for a patient to have to go through, too.
Oh, sure. And especially with cancer. Everyone with cancer wants to know, am I going to die? They always ask that question, that question.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about this wonderful column that you've been writing in the Ithaca Journal.
Mm-hmm.
One of your columns talked about the struggle to find the right language to talk about cancer. Let's talk a little bit about that. People are afraid to talk about it, and then when they do, they don't have the words.
Oh, absolutely. People, and we tend to fall back on military terms.
Right.
And I'm always struck by reading obituaries. They always say, so-and-so lost his battle with cancer.
Yes, yeah.
And it's just ingrained in us, and it's not really the best term. And with cancer, it's a matter of dealing with it. You know, it's part of your life. You deal with it. You move on the best you can. But you know,
well, people say battle like it's going to have an ending.
Right. And one thing with cancer, it may not be over. You aren't quite sure what the future brings. I mean, ironically, I know that I will have survived cancer when I die from something else.
Ah, yes. That's a very smart thought. And also, people are always told to fight. And it, you know, like you said in your column, it might make people feel really bad that they didn't fight hard enough. It
right.
makes people feel like they victimize themselves in some way.
Oh, absolutely right. And sometimes I hear people feel badly when they didn't have a more positive attitude. You know, if you would have had a more positive attitude, you wouldn't have had a recurrence. And that's not true either.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. When we try to use terms to boast, you know, get people up and, you know, to be able to face this horrible disease. But, battle language is a bit much.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of advice do you give folks who've just been diagnosed and are in that uncertain period, not knowing what to expect?
I usually tell them to take a deep breath. At first, you feel compelled to make decisions immediately. And for the most part, cancer is not a medical emergency. You can usually have, you know, days, weeks, sometimes a couple of months to explore options and figure out what makes the most sense for you. I mean, it's a very reasonable question to ask your doctor. How long do I have before moving forward? And, you know, a few cancers are aggressive and need immediate attention, but some are tend to be fairly slow moving.
Yeah, and like prostate cancer.
Yeah, prostate, a lot of breast cancers. You know, 3 or 4 weeks won't make any difference. You need to think through your options. And also, I really encourage people to have an open mind. I mean, I think for example, there's a strong role for alternative and complementary medicines. I think that can often help a person in their treatment and support. But I find that people are often either they come in with a bias, either very for it or very against integrative medicine. And I really want people to keep an open mind, explore their options, understand the pros and cons, and then make an informed decision.
Do you think people need to be more assertive, though? I mean, a lot of doctors just sort of tell people what to do after they diagnose them with cancer.
People should speak up, and people should state what they want. By the same token, people should listen. And it's very reasonable to ask your doctor, you know, what are the options? And to, you know, and some treatments have a very strong benefit. Some treatments, you know, the benefit is more limited. For example, if one treatment has an 80% chance of curing my cancer, it's one issue. If a different treatment has an 8% chance of curing my treatment, they're very different.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And people want to think about quality of life while they're going through this, too. So, I mean, and that's where I would explore alternative medicines to help comfort.
Right. I often see people, I think, over-treating when they've had recurrences. There's almost always one more tool a doctor can pull out of his or her toolbox to fight the cancer. Sometimes the added benefit of that last treatment is pretty minimal.
I understand that.
But it's reasonable to ask, you know, what's the benefit and will this make me miserable or not?
Yeah. You talk about how cancer isn't just one disease. Expound on that for people.
Sure. There are really something like 200 different types of cancer, and they have a couple commonalities in that it's cancer or cells that multiply out of control, and it can spread elsewhere in your body. But in that array of cancers, some are very, very slow moving. Basically, simply watch them. Other cancers are very, very aggressive. Some cancers are 98% curable. You know, some have a much more grim prognosis.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So you can't, you know, sometimes people will, if you're diagnosed, someone will say, my uncle had cancer and he did great, or this or that. And sometimes his cancer has nothing to do with your cancer.
Absolutely. I know there's so many aggressive cancers that, you know, I mean, it's a really grim outlook. If you're just joining us, my guest is Bob Ritter. He's the executive director of the Cancer Resource Center of the Finger Lakes. To tell us a little bit about some of the services that the Cancer Resource Center offers. Obviously, education is one of them, but tell us about that.
Sure. People often come to us when they are first diagnosed. It's interesting. The most common question I hear is when someone comes through the front door and says, I just got diagnosed and I don't even know what to ask. Because they're blown away. And there's no reason for a person to know about the cancer world until it directly affects you. So people want to know, you know, what to expect, what their options are. They need to get through the first couple of weeks. And that's often the most stressful time for people between diagnosis and beginning treatment. Usually when you begin treatment, you get into a rhythm and it becomes easier. You know what to expect. At first, there's so much uncertainty. You're just really rattled.
You would tell people, come to the Cancer Resource Center so that you can talk to a non-medical person about
it. Yes. And our office is very home-like and warm, and we want people to come in into a non-clinical setting. We don't have fluorescent bulbs, and it's just
And you also
quiet.
Get to talk to people who've gone through this, right? You know, I mean, a lot of doctors who are treating people have never been through cancer.
Absolutely not. And it's really good to talk to people who've been through cancer, who understand. And also with people like to come to our groups because when they say cancer or talk about their cancer, people don't flinch.
Yeah.
In the real world, if you tell your neighbor, well, I just got diagnosed with cancer, they flinch and they aren't quite sure what to say.
Yeah.
It's just what we do. So we have a variety of groups for people, for women with cancer, men with cancer, young adults with cancer, people with more advanced cancers. And we try to get people together with people who have similar conditions.
Yeah. Do you refer people on to psychological help if they need it? Because I'm sure it must
absolutely
scare the heck out of so many people
so that they
really can't function very well.
We often encourage people to see a therapist, see a pastor. Any support person can be very, very helpful. And also not only for the person with cancer, but also for the loved ones.
Oh, yeah.
Often the loved ones are more stressed than the person with cancer.
Yeah.
But the loved one sometimes is afraid to say anything because they want the person with cancer to be center stage and to run the ship, which is great. But if you're caring for someone, you're nervous too. You're worried about your loved one. You're worried about your own future.
Oh, yeah, and how it'll change your life.
Very much.
Which it does. I'm sure it does. Now, do you personally get involved with people who come through the Cancer Resource Center and follow their stories and have to survive, you know, their deaths and mourning and stuff? Or do you stay away from?
I do a combination. I like to be involved. I like to be with people as they go through the process, and sometimes they do die, they do pass away, and that can be hard.
Oh, yeah.
But I realize we can't fix the big problems. You know, I can't cure the cancer,
right. But
there's always something that I can do that day to make life better for that person.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what I focus on.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Now, in one of your comments, you talked about interesting facts about cancer, and one of them that a lot of people probably don't know is more women die of lung cancer than breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still true, right? I mean,
it's still very true.
Isn't that remarkable?
It is remarkable because breast cancer has much higher visibility, and women are generally more afraid of breast cancer than lung cancer,
mm-hmm.
but lung cancer is a bigger killer. It's a much more aggressive cancer than breast cancer.
Oh, absolutely.
But there's still a real stigma attached to lung cancer.
Yeah, and there's also all this talk usually in the community that I hear about how much money is being put into just certain cancers and the other ones are neglected.
Right.
And breast cancer is one of them, right?
Breast cancer has gotten a lot of attention and research money because lots of people have breast cancer. And also, people with breast cancer tend to do well. So they become survivors. There's a very large survivor community. People with lung cancer.
So it's like alums. They're going to give money to their alma mater.
There are fewer living alums of lung cancer.
Yeah. Well, they die faster, most of them.
Absolutely.
My mother died of lung cancer at the age of 59. So
mm-hmm.
I saw how fast it can happen.
And the survival is much less than for breast cancer. And for breast cancer now, 85 to 90% of people do quite well and become survivors, and that's not true for lung cancer.
God, that's amazing. Now, you also talk about the fact that treatment, you know, the end of treatment is psychologically as stressful as the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us why that is.
Sure. It's a real surprise to people because you would think when you have your last chemotherapy session or your last radiation treatment, it would be a time of celebration. You're finished.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen. People have this real letdown. And partly because when you're in treatment, you see the same doctors and nurses and radiation therapists on a regular basis, so you feel safe.
And you have a support group.
Exactly. You have this built-in support group. You have your rhythm. You have this little cocoon around you. And then they say, you're doing great. See you in 3 months. And that's unnerving.
It's like being let out of prison, probably.
You're right. It's a good analogy. You're pushed out the other end. You aren't quite sure what to do. You can't sort of bounce back to your regular rhythm right away.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes you think, well, you know, I had my last treatment on Friday. It's now Monday. I should be back to normal. It doesn't happen that way.
So at the Cancer Resource Center, do you tell people to set up some kind of a support system after they come out of this?
Yeah, actually.
That they wouldn't expect to have to do?
Right. A lot of people join our support groups when treatment ends.
Mm.
And increasingly, when people are in treatment, they're really busy. It's almost a full-time job. You see a variety of doctors. You have treatments.
Oh, yeah.
You have appointments. And they're thinking more about support when treatment ends. And that just simply knowing that other people go through that post-treatment funk is very helpful.
Yeah, I had never heard of that until I read that in your column. Right. I didn't know about that either.
Yeah, and I think lots and lots of people go through that. But if you know it happens, it seems more normal, and that's really helpful.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it is a normal process. I mean, there's still so much uncertainty, right?
There is.
No matter what.
Yeah, and when treatment ends, you always wonder, will cancer come back? And that's the big fear that people have. And for the first few months, cancer is in the middle of your head.
Yeah.
When you wake up, when you go to sleep, it's just there. And over time, it recedes to the back of your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you said that cancer is increasingly thought of as a chronic disease.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we used to believe people were either cured or they died from it.
Right.
Now, people are pretty much knowing that they may live with it and it may come back.
Right. Lots of people with cancer who would have died 10 years ago are now maintained with a really good quality of life with ongoing treatment. Mm-hmm. There are people who get chemotherapy every month or so, just on an ongoing basis. And as long as the treatment works, they keep getting it.
They keep getting therapy even when there's no evidence of cancer still
in
the body?
Well, usually, for a lot of these people, there is evidence, but the treatment is keeping the cancer stable.
Is that what they consider remission now, or not?
It wouldn't be. The words are used differently, but generally, they're looking at, hopefully the tumors shrink. A lot of times they don't go away, but they either remain stable. I mean, hopefully for a lot of people, they just remain stable, and that's a good sign.
We're going to go back to what we were talking about before. You had an article about how it makes you cringe when you hear people tell people that they should stay positive. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, because even Barbara Ehrenreich wrote a book called Bright-Sided,
mm-hmm.
when she said it's just getting so disgusting, all this happy talk and happy figures and happy faces around all these diseases. Tell us what you think about that.
Sure. Like I said, I cringe that. I mean, when you're diagnosed, people will tell you, you got to stay positive, and they'll, you know, raise their arm with the good old positive, you know, sweep of the arm. They got to stay positive, Bob. But, you know, if you tell someone to be positive, that doesn't make them positive. And people are who they are. You know, if you're a positive person, great, and you'll be positive through cancer.
And everything else in life,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're not a positive person, you know, having cheerleaders around, you know, won't help you. You have to be who you are. And certainly being positive makes you more pleasant to be around.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not really much evidence that being positive actually helps fight your cancer.
Yeah, yeah. But do you think that came from a place where, you know, you're encouraged not to be stressed out by things because that can make you sick? You know, I mean, that kind of a
right,
attitude.
But also with that, you know, there's not really much evidence that stress causes cancer.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's so. I think we're always looking for reasons, you know, what caused my cancer. And we know there's a very strong connection between smoking and lung cancer and some other cancers.
Uh-huh.
For the most part, we don't know what causes most cancers.
Yeah, that's right.
And we certainly don't know what caused your cancer. And we try to figure out, well, why?
Yeah, I know. A lot of people think it might be the environment, though. You know, I mean, we've been hearing more and more about, but no one knows.
No one knows. And actually, it's rarely one thing. It's usually a cascade of things. And for example, some people are predisposed by their genetics to have cancer. And then perhaps if a person is predisposed, maybe some environmental insult will affect them.
Yeah, trigger it.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's usually it's never genetics or the environment. It's often some sort of combination.
Yeah.
And it's rarely one thing. It's sort of, again, it's kind of a cascade of events that happen that causes cancer.
Yeah, yeah. Well, then back to that positive thing. You say that one of your concerns about that is that people will blame themselves for not being positive enough if the cancer recurs or if they don't find the cure.
Right. And people don't need another reason to beat themselves up about. Because people often blame themselves for the cancer. We all do stupid things in life. You know, whether you smoked or whatever you did in your youth, people do dumb things. The issue is when you have cancer, it doesn't matter if you smoked or if you did or whatever. You have it. How can you deal with it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, trying to figure out where it came from isn't going to make it go away either.
Right.
It's just going to make you spin your wheels.
Spin your wheels, and we will
waste
never know.
Waste your time.
Yes.
Tell us how you deal with grief.
Grief is part of our work. It's hard, and it seems to come, you know, there are certain blocks of time in which we have several people who pass away, and just seems to be that these rhythms where you lose several people. And we talk about that, you know, as a staff, you know, with volunteers, because we become close to people, and it's hard. But we try to remember people, try to remember people as individuals, and I guess we realize nothing is guaranteed. And again, it gets back to the fact that, you know, our role is to be with them during this journey. And interesting, I talked once to Reverend Tim Dean, who's a chaplain at Cayuga Medical Center, and he said that the chaplain's role is to be with people when they are in dark places. And I thought that's often what we do, is we're simply with people, and that makes it easier to know that someone is there beside you.
Yeah, yeah. Are there any things that you tools that you give people to deal with grief through the Cancer Resource Center, books that they could perhaps read, or ways of comforting themselves?
Sure. We talk to people. HospCare is a wonderful local resource. Often people refer people there for their bereavement groups. And we encourage people to stay connected to us, that we find that people often come to our support groups for support, but they often stay because they like the community. And I mean,
you're an example of that.
Yeah, very much. Uh-huh. And I like that community. And sometimes people come to us, and even if a person dies, sometimes their loved one stays connected to us.
Oh, that's great.
Because there is that sense of community.
Uh-huh. We only have about a minute left. Do you feel, after having been in this community for so many years, that we will find cures for some of these cancers? Or is this just going to be part of the human condition that we're always going to have to deal with?
Certainly cancer in general will be part of the human condition. I don't think, at least in the foreseeable future, there won't be a single cure for cancer. But we will find, and we are finding, very effective treatments for certain types of cancer. So to use a baseball analogy, I think we're looking for singles rather than the home run.
Yeah, because there's so many different cancers.
There's so many different types of cancer, and sometimes we stumble upon treatments that are very, very effective. Like for testicular cancer, we can treat that very effectively, even if it's fairly advanced. And we can't do that with other cancers.
Yeah.
With
yeah.
childhood cancers, we've made remarkable success through the last 20, 30 years. So we're making lots of progress, but it's sort of cancer by cancer as opposed to all cancers at the same time.
Yeah, yeah. It probably will be part of the human condition, is my philosophy around it.
Right.
Can you give us some contact information, and can people get involved in the Resource Center?
We love to have people involved, from people who've had cancer, people who are touched by cancer. We serve many family members. We have lots of volunteers. So you can call us at our office, 277-0960. You can stop by our office, which is 612 West State Street in Ithaca, or visit our website at www.crcfl.net.
Great. Well, Bob Ritter, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and telling us a little bit about the Resource Center. Really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.